From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment, the home edition. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Well, what do you do after you've shaved your dreadlocks off in front of a crowd of people and got married in the past few years? I know, you take over a world-known film festival in the midst of a pandemic. I'm, of course, speaking to Tabitha Jackson, who is the director of the Sundance Film Festival, which is imminent, a few days away. First of all, Tabitha, thanks so much for doing this.
It's an absolute pleasure, Elvis. Great to be here.
Here's a question I wanted to ask you. What was your first film festival experience? What did you, the first festival you went to, if you remember it?
I think it was actually the Sheffield International Documentary Festival in the UK. And it took me a while to be able to afford to go to a film festival. And that was the first one. And I just remember the thrill of it, the thrill of being able to talk to people about the films we'd all watched. And then the slightly insane, kidney-damaging social life that also went with that.
Well, I guess because the first time we go to festivals and you get the chance to be around people who think the way we do, who have the same excitement about film that we have, and getting to see a movie early for the first time is really an indelible experience, isn't it?
It is. And one of the things I was just trying to think, what did I see at that festival? One of the things I saw was a slate of Iranian films put together by Mark Cousins. And at that festival, we sat down for the first time and I was able then to support him making his first documentary called The First Movie. But it's that sense of discovery. You are, once you've bought into the festival, it's that sense of, well, I'm available now, what's on, I'll go and see it. It's a very different experience from turning on the television or, you know, going to a streaming platform and choosing it. It's really that notion of discovery.
What you're talking about, you talked about what it took to gather the resources to get to that festival. And so much of what film festivals have been has been in one way or another exclusionary. And I'm guessing one of the things that's exciting you about having Sundance under your aegis at this time is that you're getting a chance to explode some of those exclusionary barriers, aren't you?
Yes, that's right. I mean, some of the most obvious ones, like if we have a festival, as we do, in a mountain town in Utah during winter, it means that anybody, I was going to say physically infirm, but actually it's an arduous festival to get around, no matter if you've got all your arms and legs and are in full health. It's like a pilgrimage. There's something about the effort involved in navigating it that is part of its compelling aspect. But if you simply can't manage to do that, then you're never going to go to Sundance. So having a festival where there are no physical barriers as such, and I don't take that lightly. We're also doing what we can to improve the experience for the deaf community or for people with visual impairment, et cetera, et cetera. That's important, but that's one. And then the other, of course, is the financial barrier and socioeconomics and who is excluded from festivals and from our festival, just from the cost of getting there and staying there. Now, all this is said with humility. There is much more that we would wish to do around it being a truly inclusive place. And there are other barriers as well, which are not physical or financial, but also kind of to do with welcoming. What really is a welcome? What is a meaningful welcome? It's not simply unlocking the door. It's extending a genuine and specific invitation to come in. And that's also, you know, what we want to work on. Who feels that Sundance is not for them currently? And how can we change that and be a place where everybody wants to be a part of this incredible community?
Look, I have to say, as a person of color, I sort of avoided Sundance for a long time just because I felt it wasn't the kind of place that I belonged.
Mm.
And I wonder if as a person of color, that was something that you are hearing from people too. And you have to tell them, well, no, this is a place that does want to extend its arms to you, no matter where you live physically and socially.
Yes, absolutely. There are so many things. We are all made up of so many aspects. And speaking personally, you know, I'm British. I come from a working class background. I'm not white. And the film festival community also is intimidating. People who are film lovers and cinephiles and who make the films and who support it. It can be an intimidating thing to contemplate walking into. So that feeling of and it's part of my biography, actually, of always feeling like the outsider is heightened in places like this. But once you enter and you find your community, and hopefully it's getting easier to find your community if you're a person of color, or if you're a trans person, or a person who's deaf, it's easier to find your community, and that you, one, can help increase the richness of that community by bringing someone with you next time, whether this is the online experience or the in-person experience. Creating a space in which these small communities add up to a big community engaged in the same endeavor, which is about supporting freedom of expression and these incredible distinctive voices. We as a festival need to make it possible for people to come and bring other like-minded people with them, so that we are representing a diversity which is reflected in the work.
One of the things I would sort of submit to you as the kind of person you were as an executive bringing people in, or you brought in people who also felt in philosophical terms the way you did about sort of exploding myths and these shibboleths that existed that separated populations. And you saw a documentary as both somebody in the private and public sectors as a way to sort of create community rather than to exclude people.
I think why I was drawn to documentary was I believe that the arts and cinema in particular, and television and the kind of visual narrative arts help in meaning making. You know, I'm adopted, mixed race, child of divorced parents. I have many questions. And so I come to the arts as a way of trying to understand what this all means. What is our place in it? What are other people making of this lived experience? And one of the ways that has really compelled me is when artists find not just what it is they want to say, but how they want to say it. And so in nonfiction, before I arrived at the festival, my career has mainly been in nonfiction. That was seeing filmmakers take lived experience, lived reality, the stuff of the world, and express it creatively. So playing with form was something that I've always been drawn to. And the space in between fiction and nonfiction, the space in between documentary and theatre. And through that comes a new language, a new vocabulary for understanding something of the feeling of the world and how it's expressing itself.
One of the things I'm thrilled in this conversation to hear you say is defining film as fiction and nonfiction versus narrative and documentary, as if to say documentary can't be narrative, or mm-hmm. that fiction film can't play with the idea of what narrative is supposed to be, because that very assumption that one is narrative and one is not is a very sort of nuanced way of saying that one is better than the other.
Yes. And one of the reasons why I have loved being at Sundance is that always, although the within the broader institute, which predates the festival by four or so years, the documentary film program is a relatively recent, the beginning of this century that the documentary filmmaking program came into being. Documentaries at the festival have always been on an equal footing with fiction, in the sense that there's always been a documentary competition, that there was it was called House of Docs on Main Street. Robert Redford, our founder, always knew the value of nonfiction film. And so that has served us very well in the festival. Even thinking about this year, there's there's a moment in Chicago when a group of women, this is real reality, not virtual reality. There's a moment in Chicago when a group of women came together around reproductive rights, and that they became essentially illegal abortion providers because they knew they could do it safely. In the program, the festival program this year, we have a film which is a fictional version of that, and a film which is a non-fictional version of that. And it's very interesting seeing what each form does and how they complement each other. And it also invites us to reflect upon what is truth in any of that.
Again, I find this conversation thrilling just because it's about, for me, ideally what a festival is supposed to be, which is to say that this is all about catalysts and creating conversation, and that there really shouldn't be dividing lines. And again, it's what I said to you a few minutes ago, and it's what I've often thought about your career and prepping for this, and just thinking about the movies you championed in both the Sundance Doc program, but in your life before as an executive, is just this idea of movies that one way or another, either explicitly or implicitly, are out to do these very things that we are talking about.
I think, you know, we talk about art history as a series of rebellions, responding to something that came before. And I think that's not dissimilar to how we think about independent cinema, which is a series of resistances, reactions to the status quo and what might be different. And I am drawn to challenging orthodoxies, and I'm drawn to people who challenge orthodoxies. And that basically is pretty much the entire artist community. And so this is a thrilling time. And then when you add to it, you know, in this particular moment, the rise of authoritarianism, a global pandemic, the revealing of the and accentuating of the social chasms, how do we make sense of all this? And how do we come together around work to understand what the present can mean from different perspectives and what the future might mean as we emerge transformed from a 10-day festival where you're experiencing sensibilities and work from all around the world?
It's funny you're saying this, because I find myself thinking, I think now more than ever, people are looking at through traditional orthodoxy of being consumed by an experience bigger than themselves, which is what film can do at its best.
Yes, yes, exactly. That's what festivals can do at their best. When you go, when you get into that slightly mesmerized state of going from one film to another, to another, to another, that even the kind of 4-film-a-day average, which you can get in at a festival, it just does something to you. It changes your cells. And I think you come out of that series of black boxes when we were in physical theatres with a changed sensibility about what is possible and a kind of hypervigilance about what we're seeing on screens, which we now are attached to for so many hours of the day. We understand perhaps more about what images are doing. And all this is vital to being alive now and understanding both how we are being conditioned and how we might slip out of that almost narcotic state of just consuming images and narrative and story, and not questioning what it is or what it's doing or who made it, who financed it.
We're going to take a break. My guest is Tabitha Jackson. She is now deep into her tenure as the director of the Sundance Film Festival, which is about to begin in a few days. It's a treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. We're talking cellular reconstruction with my guest, Tabitha Jackson, who's the director of the Sundance Film Festival. It's the treatment. And you were saying something really interesting, so many interesting things, in fact, before the break. But when you're talking about independent film, and now more than ever, and this is something I want to talk to you about, especially as the theatrical experience is being reconformed, and you were talking about watching streaming and getting caught into that kind of slipstream of losing consciousness. Where do we live now in the world where the independent, that rebellion you were talking about, is subsumed and institutionalized much quicker than it would have been even 10 years ago in terms of what filmmakers are doing?
It used to be the case, perhaps, that a film would premiere at Sundance and people would be hoping and praying it got picked up, because if it didn't, it would never be seen again. And now the opposite is true, almost, that if a film is made, and that's no easy thing, then there is going to be a place for it, an outlet for it, even if it's the equivalent of kind of self-publishing. You can do it, and if you can find that audience, which is the big thing, you can bring people to the work. Now that, and I think of this particularly from the nonfiction standpoint, people kept talking about the golden age of documentary, and I think that phrase may have come out of my mouth as well. I found myself accidentally uttering it because, documentaries had often been described as, you know, eating your vegetables, or it's medicinal or educational, and it's something you really ought to do, not something you would want to do. That's what documentary was for many people for so long. Now we are seeing that I think audiences have a greater opportunity to see exciting nonfiction work than they ever have done before, because of the streamers who are hungry for what has now unfortunately become called content. All these new platforms, all the pluses, all the plus platforms need work, they need content. So there is a golden age in that this work does not languish in a vault somewhere. However, with the appetite for this work, with what one might call the commodification of nonfiction, so, you know, reality TV, single plotline, true crime stories that an audience, a general audience, truly enjoys and laps up, and there's nothing wrong with that. The conservatism or the cautiousness of the marketplace means that that's maybe the only thing they want, as well as biopics of famous people, because the audience knows that. There's the algorithm can understand that there is an audience out there for this film about X or Y celebrity. The worry about that is that as filmmakers try to make a living, pay the rent, be sustainable, and as public media, public television, foreign sales become smaller and fall away slightly because of the rise of streamers, then what we are left with is not dissimilar, perhaps, to when Sundance was first founded and there were a few big studios who would determine which work could get made, that they became the tastemakers and that they were serving a marketplace. So Sundance and anyone invested in the independent voice, that was when we came about in 1981. Sundance Institute was founded by Robert Redford. And once again, I would say we are finding ourselves in a position where we worry for the vibrant expression and funding of independent work, meaning work that is coming from perspectives that and using forms and questioning power in a way that might not be what the marketplace is looking for.
What you're saying here is something that's piqued my interest, and something I had in many conversations with your predecessors at Sundance, is what does all this mean, this idea of this basically almost, as you're saying, commodification, but certainly institutionalization of nonfiction storytelling, is what is happening to what used to be called the experimental film, which is to say artists being attracted to the medium because it can work in ways both sort of emotionally and physically. The medium can work on us in ways that other media cannot, which I think in some way in the big screen and in festivals, that kind of film seems to be disappearing.
I was really heartened to see the biggest documentary festival in the world, which is called IDFA in Amsterdam. They've just added sections which deal with the experimental film. And, you know, Berlin are doing interesting things too. We have always, with our New Frontier program, wanted to be a home for filmmakers experimenting in whichever ways they want. Our next section was also founded on that principle. But to be honest, Elvis, I think that experimental film has always had a hard time finding a place because we are so addicted as a culture to story. And story, of course, is a primal expression of who we are. And we think of early humans, you know, gathered around fires, telling stories to each other. But story has also become slightly tyrannical, I think, in both in terms of curation and funding. And what that does is, I talked about the kind of simple single narrative, and there is a Western three-act structure that many people hew to. But when we talk about experimental filmmaking, it normally means not a linear narrative structure. And if we can't get away from that, because it comforts us and we know where we're going and we know that things are going to resolve in the end, we aren't going to find that transcendent or complex language that really expresses how we live and what life is. So I worry about this tyranny of story and the conservatism that's held within it.
It's the truth. We're talking about the tyranny of narrative with my guest, Tabitha Jackson, who's director of the Sundance Film Festival. As we're talking about this, that idea, the greatest moments that most of us have had experiencing film have been about moments that have broken with narrative and about moments that exalt those, really the ethereal that can be transcendent. And I've got to guess that that's, to a large extent, why you wanted to come there, so you could encourage this sort of symbiosis, which becomes this kind of marriage of these things that say that all these ideas can exist simultaneously. The world is complex enough to understand that there's more than one way to do anything.
Yes, absolutely. And the notion of coming to encourage it or facilitate it is probably more altruistic than the reality is, which is I'm thrilled by it. I am thrilled by how artists express the feeling of the world and how they do that using, in this case, you know, sound and image and structure. I much prefer the word structure to story. It can be anything. And so I think of a filmmaker like Ramel Ross, who was part of a kind of experimental program that we did called The Art of Nonfiction, where we're trying to learn from artists what they need in terms of the conditions that help their creativity. Ramel Ross made a film called Hail County this evening. And he was still is a photographer by background, these large format images. This film of his, Hail County this evening, he basically almost literally wanted to redefine what it is to have Black bodies on screen, frame by frame. Whatever expectation we might have about what was going to happen next because of who we were seeing on screen, he wanted to subvert that frame by frame. So the editing is extraordinary. The way he thinks of color is extraordinary. And the fact that, you know, when the film came out, and it was extraordinary because this film managed to get all the way to being nominated for an Academy Award. And I say that not because that is the ultimate pinnacle of worth or value, but because it takes a lot to get a film on that journey towards an Oscar. And, you know, his producer, Jocelyn Barnes, and his whole team around him were able to do this. It was totally against the odds, I thought, that it would get the cultural traction just because of the kind of film it was. Not that it's not a brilliant film, but because it's not one that the market knew it wanted and that the cultural mainstream knew it wanted. So how he was thinking about a history of cinema, a history of erasure and misrepresentation, and how he was determined with every frame of this film to subvert that. And I heard Brian Stevenson use the phrase recently, narrative reparations, that in a sense, this film was part of the narrative reparation around the black bodies on screen, was just utterly thrilling.
Well, before we go, I have to ask you the money question, of course, which is the festival being imminent. What do you think people should see or look out for, since it's now open to more people than ever before?
I think what we love about the festival is the sense that it's a festival of discovery. So I don't want to be too prescriptive, but I would say in that spirit of discovery, there will be films there that we love that feature big names and casts that you'll be familiar with, or you know you're in for a great ride with this film. And I would say, try the one that you haven't heard of, that you don't think is for you. And I think you'll discover something remarkable. You might discover why, no, you were totally right and you knew you were going to hate this film, but now you know why. Or you might discover something that you never would have come across if it had been left to the algorithm of telling you what you already know. There are 82 feature films in this festival, and there are 50 brand new shorts, and there are another 40 classic shorts. So I would just want you to wander around the program, festival.sundance.org. Just wander around the program, read the descriptions of the work, look at the talks and events, which are free and open to everybody, and think about how you might best hope to surprise yourself.
So there is a gem you think that people might want to look at this year's festival.
There is, because you know that our festival concentrates on the new and looking forward and this new explosion of work every year. But what we always also do is have a film that we have wanted to restore, and it's called a collection screening. This year we are showing Just Another Girl on the IRT, which was made in 1992 by Leslie Harris. And Leslie Harris is one of the, it feels like the lost voices. So she had this film, Just Another Girl. It broke out. It won awards at Sundance. It got picked up by Miramax. And she has never been able to make another film. And I think that is because she is a woman. And I think it's because she was a woman of color. And I think it's because the work that she wanted to make challenged the orthodoxies. So people like her and Julie Dash, these voices that were lost to us because of the distribution system, the infrastructure, the industry. I am so pleased that we can show this film at the festival in its restored version, and that perhaps we will be able to support Leslie to make her second feature 30 years later.
I can't thank you enough for doing this, Tabitha. It's been a thrill to have you. Please come back.
You bet I will.
Stick around. My guest is Tabitha Jackson. She's redefining independent film with a tenure as the director of the Sundance Film Festival. Recording engineer today and part of our production staff, of course, is Katie Gilchrist. The show is edited and produced by Rebecca Mooney. To better days, everyone. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.